Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
CRP is one of the world's largest voluntary conservation programs, and it's run through the Farm Service Agency.
Farm Service Agency Administrator Zach Ducheneau.
Started in 1985, and through this program, producers can elect to receive a rental payment on environmentally sensitive land, where we're changing the nature of the production, focusing more on vegetative cover, wildlife habitat, and the prospect to use it in emergency cases for haying and grazing to help feed forage-consuming livestock. We've got an acreage cap set out in the Farm Bill. The current acreage cap is 27 million acres. And as of the acceptance of these offers, we are going to be right at about 24 million with continuous sign-up going on and with some substantial acreages of opportunity in our CREP agreements.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
The Farm Bill is never an easy piece of legislation to move, as you know. And so in this environment, maybe even more difficult than anything we've experienced. This will be my third one.
Arkansas representative and a member of the House Ag Committee, Rick Crawford.
And none of them have been easy. This one may be more difficult. The budget constraints that we have, the political dynamics at play. So for a variety of reasons, this one may be a little more difficult to maneuver, but it's every bit as important as the others. In fact, maybe more so. And that's because, you know, I've said this before, and most people that work in the ag space recognize this, a country that can't feed and clothe itself is vulnerable. And we're seeing that manifest in China, for example. I mean, China is a country that less than 20% of their land mass is arable. They have a population of over 1.4 billion. And that is manifest in belligerence in other parts of the world because they're trying to reconstitute that Silk Road. They call it the Belt and Road Initiative. They're trying to cultivate resources to be able to feed and clothe themselves because they can't do it on their own terms. And so they're economically belligerent with other countries, particularly in sub-Saharan Africa and South America and Central America. So we don't want to get to a point where we can't feed and clothe ourselves. So our ability to invest in our own resources as it applies to food and fiber and shelter, that's important. It's essential to our national security.
And he talks about revisiting ARC and PLC.
Well, I think there's always room for improvement. I will say I think the PLC has probably had greater appeal than ARC, and that may be as much a geographic dictate as anything. And PLC was very much appealing to our neck of the woods, whereas ARC not so much. But once we got into the first farm bill that I was a part of, when PLC and ARC were initially introduced, it didn't take but a couple of years before farmers started to realize, you know, maybe PLC is a better option for us. And so the uptake on PLC was significant. And so that means probably there's a little more pressure in that program. But ARC doesn't necessarily mean that ARC is going away or that there's any push to make ARC go away. But there are scenarios when maybe ARC is preferred. But I think there was more of a view that PLC actually worked better. And so there was a broad uptake there, and that kind of has transcended the geography. Initially, we saw PLC in the southern states, places like Texas, Arkansas, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, in that southern portion, whereas maybe up further north, in Illinois, Iowa, Indiana, northern Missouri, they might have been more favorable to ARC, as an example, Minnesota, places like that. Now I think they've seen PLC has a little bit better application, easier to manage, more predictable. And so that's where we have to do a better job in administering PLC. One of those areas is the reference prices, which, of course, were static. They were set on a 2012 model, and the program didn't even go in effect till 2014. So it's been behind for quite some time. Well, that was fine when we were dealing with almost free money because interest rates were low, input costs were relatively flat by comparison. And then we fast forward to the last couple of years where we've seen inflation through the roof, we've seen interest rates increase, and so cost of production has gone up, and no address of the production cost model that was prescribed in 2012. So that's where we've got to fix that. We've either one of two things, and I think certainly need to update to reflect current cost models, production costs. The other thing I think we need to do is figure out a way to index that model so that we're not having the same problem in 2 or 3 years, and that there should be some sort of reflection of actual costs that's reflective of the economic constraints that are put on farmers.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
First and foremost, you know, I'm a very big supporter of crop insurance and the nutrition title. Those are two really key critical components that I think have a lot of bipartisan support on the committee.
She's a new member of Congress and of the House Agriculture Committee from the 13th Congressional District of Illinois. Former Chief of Staff at the Office of Management and Budget, or OMB, Nikki Budzinski.
So obviously very supportive of those things, and those are definitely deliverables for the district. But apart from that, I actually get to serve on three different subcommittees. Most House members actually only volunteer for two. I volunteered for three. So on that, I get to really be an advocate on the front lines for a lot of those issues, a lot of those titles that are going to be really important in negotiation in the Farm Bill. I'm on the commodities subcommittee, so making sure that we're advocating for our top commodities in Illinois, which we're the number one soybean producer in the country, the state of Illinois is. We're the second producer only to Iowa and corn, and we're also top pork producer. So we have a lot of really important commodities within central and southern Illinois, wanting to make sure I'm advocating for our family farmers and that food production. I'd also say agricultural research is something that's a really important title for me, too. I highlighted for you some of the great places of higher education that we have. We actually even have in the city of Decatur, they've actually set up an FFA academic excellence program within Decatur. So a lot of great agricultural education programs that are really critical. And something that I really want to be an advocate for within the Farm Bill. But also I would say there's a lot of other legislative initiatives. One of them I just recently introduced, which is the Young Farmers Bill, bipartisan piece of legislation. My Republican colleague on the House Ag Committee, who too is a freshman, Zach Nunn, representing Des Moines. You know, we bonded as friends, I think, very quickly in new member orientation because he, like me, we both represent state capital communities. He represents Des Moines. I represent Springfield, Illinois. That's my home. And so we bonded over corn and soybean and pork, and we've come together on, I think, a really important piece of legislation that we just introduced last week that's going to help incentivize and expand the land capital access program within the USDA. Right now, that is just a small pilot program, but what we're advocating for is expanding it to a $100 million program annually, that what it would do is actually help to provide technical assistance, support for young and beginning farmers, those in underserved areas that are underrepresented in agriculture, help them to get on their feet so that they can get access to land and they can possibly compete with developers that are also looking at that same land. How do we help those young and beginning farmers get access to land? And so through this grant program, we can provide direct financial aid to them as they're getting off the ground. I think that's really important, Tony, as we think about the fact that farmers now, on an average, are upwards of almost 60 years old today. So you have to ask yourself, who is going to be coming up behind them? Who is that next generation of young farmers to be taking advantage of the great soil we have in central Illinois? Continue to grow corn and soybeans so that we are a leading agricultural leader in the country. We need young farmers to be coming up the pipeline.
Illinois Representative Nikki Budzinski. It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Argentina came out yesterday and had an in-country report of their soybean crop being down another 2, 3, 4 million metric tons, even from the latest USDA numbers.
Dan O'Brien is the Kansas State grain economist.
From the last WASDE report released on the 9th of June. So I think that's one of the major factors that affected the soybean market yesterday. I think some concerns also about dryness for palm oil, as I understand that. In the world, we don't grow palm oil in the U.S., but it affects the oil seed oil market. So that's at play. And there are some concerns about dryness in France that affects wheat. We have this underlying issue going on right now that certainly needs to be thought about. And it comes back again to the impact of that Russia-Ukraine war with the inability to ship wheat as readily as Ukraine would like. They've taken and went by land up into neighboring countries to their west, and has caused some real gluts of grain over the border into Poland, the countries nearby. And of course, and that's caused problems for the farmers there, and there's EU government money coming in. Well, anyway, that has affected the grain market in Europe. Again, there's a whole slug of Ukrainian grain that's come into Eastern Europe and has lowered the price of grain. So we have reports in the ag media, a lot of concern about how those prices for wheat in that part of the world are so low that it becomes almost, if not, has become economical to buy wheat from there and have export companies ship Eastern Europe wheat across the Atlantic Ocean into the United States and still make money relative to the cash prices that we're seeing here. So I know a lot of folks like in Kansas Wheat, U.S. Wheat Council, a whole number of places are concerned about that because it really presents pretty tough competition for the U.S., both in terms of domestic cash prices as well as on the export front. So what I can vouch for is the quality of that wheat. Is it just quantity alone, and what can the millers and bakers do with that? To the degree that we have that happening, it certainly is a concern in the wheat market. I guess I will be wondering what happens when we actually get our harvest going, when we have the quality of wheat that we'll have here in the U.S., those supplies are available. Then I'm curious to see whether that stream of wheat coming that started to come into the U.S. from these other places, very cheap priced, if that abates or not. So it's something surely worth watching.
What's his outlook?
The USDA numbers, basically their trend line yield, they assume normal, and those projections were made 2 or 3 months ago for corn, 181.5 bushels per acre. And with the weather conditions that have come in, it's very likely that at least it opens the door for questions as to whether we'll get to the 181.5 bushels per acre. It's about 15.2, 15.3 billion bushels. If you look at alternative scenarios, 177 bushels per acre, about 14.9 billion, 174 bushels per acre for the U.S., ends up about a 14.6 billion bushel figure, then you end up with tightening stocks to use and sharply higher prices. So that's something I'm watching. If we were to drop to 177 bushels an acre by the time we make a set of assumptions going forward, instead of the USDA's projection of $4.80, well, it's like $5.40. If we get to 174 and things really tighten up, it's something closer to $6. So I think the markets right now are struggling with that to try to reconcile that uncertainty. I've got similar numbers that person can see on our www.agmanager.info website in KC8 Ag Economics that can lay out wheat as well as soybean scenarios. But the big issue right now is that of corn, and wondering about what our final corn yield will be, how tight stocks to use will get, and where that could take the U.S. price of corn as we move on into future months.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
This is such a big topic for rural America and the Midwest.
Iowa Representative, member of the House Ag Committee, Randy Feenstra.
You know, we produce an incredible amount of biofuels, whether it be ethanol and biodiesel, and we have to protect that. Obviously, we want to make sure we're energy independent, and we can do that by using ethanol and biodiesel. But what we're seeing is foreign entities buying our farmland, which really creates a protection problem. Actually, 33 million acres is owned by foreign entities. That's the size of Iowa. So I created a bill, the DARE Act, to defend the American Energy Act to stop China and other foreign adversaries buying our farmland. Again, it's a problem because it creates energy. It creates the resource of corn and soybeans to produce ethanol and biodiesel.
On the topic of exports.
Exports, again, is so important. And, you know, we wish we could be doing more with exports. And we look at the commodity markets right now, and there's a real concern, especially when it comes to the hog production and pork. There's low dollars for the producers right now, and a lot of it has to do with exports. But the big thing that we also worried about, especially when it comes to pork and other animals, is animal foreign diseases. We saw it with avian bird flu. We surely don't want African swine fever. But what we're working on is to make sure that if it does happen in the U.S., that it's regionalized. And we want our administration to make sure that we're selling to the rest of the countries that, you know what, if something happens in Georgia, that should not affect the export market in Iowa. And so we have to create regionalization areas and make sure countries create these trade zones that they can still buy from Iowa if something happens in another part of the nation, whether it be African swine fever or bird flu or whatever it might be. So there's a significant bill out there right now that we're trying to push through the Farm Bill to make sure that happens through this regionalization process.
What are the conditions back home?
So last year we had a severe drought, and we went into this year. We had a great winter, but we're still in drought mode. We've seen some rains here and there, spotty rains. The crops are coming up, corn and soybeans are coming up, but there's a lot of worrying happening right now. Especially, you know, that first month, you want that crop to start growing. Right now, that corn is probably 8 inches right now. Beans are just popping, so it's very important, and it's concerning to every producer.
He also talks about the importance of precision ag.
We saw this at the Farm Progress Show in Boone, Iowa last year, is that there's so much new technology out there to add value to the producers, to add value and efficiency. The margins are so thin right now that these producers need that new technology. But the problem is that the technology is so expensive. So we created the Precision Ag Act, working with the USDA, so farmers could spend up to $500,000 and get a low-interest loan through the USDA to buy some of this new technology so they could be state-of-the-art and they can collect some of this added value that's out there with this new technology. Again, this is going to be part of the Farm Bill. I'm really excited about it, but we have to continue to work with that producer to get these new technologies in their hands.
And his work on the Ways and Means Committee.
First of all, Ways and Means handles all trade issues. So we're doing a lot with trade when it comes to Mexico and the corn issue, when it comes to other countries, Taiwan, Japan, and stuff like that, making sure that we have these free trade deals and tariff-free. So we're working with that in Ways and Means. But then it's also the taxation when it comes to like-kind exchange, when it comes to stepped-up and basis, all these things that affect the American farmer. So I'm very cognizant. I work very hard to make sure that we protect our producers and making sure that they can continue to have some profitability as they move forward in their operational loans.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
So number one, our focus is work, work, work. We're going to outwork the people that are opposed to the Farm Bill.
Austin Scott is a member of the House Agriculture Committee on what proponents of the 2023 Farm Bill are doing this summer.
We're going to unite behind GT on the House Ag Committee. We do have good Republicans from my state, David Scott, Sanford Bishop, Purdue, good guys that are on the House Ag Committee. Our hope is that we get a good bipartisan piece of legislation that supports production agriculture out of committee, and that we bring it to the floor and that we pass it. And we expect it will be a coalition bill that is fair for the consumer that is dependent upon SNAP benefits, and there are a lot of our fellow brothers that need their SNAP benefits. We did raise the work requirements by 5 years from 49 to 54. We didn't raise it to senior citizen level, as some have said. It's a raise from 49 to 54 on the work requirements if you're going to receive SNAP benefits. And I think that we will get a good piece of legislation through the House of Representatives. We got to then get it across the floor of the House of Representatives.
12 titles to the Farm Bill, and one is focused on rural development. Scott explains.
They're extremely important, especially if you represent rural America as I do. I represent, all or parts of 29 counties. The majority of those counties are rural counties. Without agriculture, you don't have the tax base for a school system or a city or a county in those rural counties. You don't have the tractor dealerships, the car dealerships, or the restaurants. And so in those communities where agriculture is the economy, it is 100% of the economy. Everything else is dependent upon it. So the grants through USDA, all of those things are important, but nothing is as important to me as the crop insurance and the commodity title. Without that, rural America is going to suffer. Over the last couple of years, we've seen the SNAP benefit portion of the Farm Bill move from 65% all the way up to, it looked like it was going to be 85%, and now it's back down to about 81%. So we now have to, whether it be USDA grants, whether it be CRP-type programs or conservation programs, or the commodity support and the crop insurance programs, those things used to get a combined about 35 to 40% of the Farm Bill. Now those things combined are going to get somewhere around 18% of the Farm Bill. And so it is absolutely going to put significant pressure on all aspects of those other titles in the Farm Bill. You take that coupled with the fact that you have some Democrats, not all Democrats, but some Democrats that want to add what they're calling an environmental title to the Farm Bill. And where would they take that money from? They're not going to take it from the SNAP benefits. So they would try to stick another title in there and take more from those things that those of us in rural America actually need. And we need to make it through. We needed to make it through, you know, this year and next year and the following year. So very concerned about the approach of some on the extreme left to it. Very concerned about the approach of some on the extreme right to it. And, Tony, we're just going to, you know, we're going to outwork them. We're going to keep going on a daily basis, and we're going to beat them with the truth.
It's Austin Scott, a member of the House Agriculture Committee from Georgia. Again, a few members from key farm states have already come out saying they will vote against any farm bill. All ag, all day.
This is Agriculture Today.
We are so grateful for the rain, but there where that rain was South Tule Creek. The good thing about it is it all runs into Lake McKenzie, and we know how much Lake McKenzie needs the water. And our playa lakes are as full as I've ever seen them. It is really something to see.
Barry Evans is a producer from the Texas High Plains, Swisher County, Texas.
You know, a few months ago, we were doing interviews and talking about the drought, and in 3-4 weeks' time, now we're talking about how full our lakes are and the floodings, which been it's a welcome change.
But led to some additional challenges.
The effect on producers is that this changes our plan so much. This year, even in late April and early May is when I'll typically start planting cotton, and even though we were so dry then, it was really cool. And I didn't start planting cotton until about the 6th or 7th of May, which is a little late for me. And a lot of people didn't even start then because we were so dry and we just didn't know what to do. So I was fortunate. I got all my cotton in the county. I don't know if half the cotton got planted that was expected to. And our final plant date is last day of May, so we are quite a bit past that now. So I think we'll see a lot of grain sorghum. A few people are talking corn. Of going in. My big decision now to make is where I have lost a part of a field or maybe one field is, do I go in and try to stub in some cotton and try to keep that field, or do I need to go ahead and fail it, maybe plant a sorghum or save it out for wheat? So trying to make that decision, especially where we lost partial fields, which there's a lot of that, you know, did some hail come across or bottom end flooded out. And then there's the cold weather, just has some sick cotton. So what do we do from here? That's the real question I'm dealing with now.
And with cotton prices 70 to 80 cents?
The prices do make it a challenge. Our cost of production has gone up so much. Our capital expenses have just really accelerated. Utilities expenses have gone up, even though, you know, like diesel's coming down. We're also seeing chemical prices are starting to come back down some, which gives us some relief. But we still, you know, everything has just shifted upwards on our cost structure, and trying to grow 75, 80 cent cotton now is not overly encouraging. So that's one of the reasons people didn't plant in early May. You know, people were a little discouraged over the price and waited to see what was happening. And now we're just kind of in limbo because of those prices. You know, it's with our input costs where they're at, it just doesn't work at this level. So we're really, really scratching our head wondering what to do.
But he does admit the challenges are, for the most part, nationwide and commodity-wide.
The common denominator among, it seems like, all commodity groups, we mentioned our cost structure just being so much higher than it was, and our safety net, especially in the PLC and ART programs, are way too low for the cost of everything right now. And there's just such a great concern, you know, if we can move those base levels up, you know, to a more workable level. And all the commodity groups seem to be somewhat on board of doing that. The hard thing is to do that, it takes a lot of money. And can we get that in the Farm Bill to get that done? We have some really good allies in the Farm Bill, and Congressman Arrington being the chair of the Budget Committee, and I think he really understands that. Our leadership on the House and Senate Ag Committee on both the Republican and Democrat side, they get it also. So we've got some good leadership to look at that. So hopefully we can get those prices on PLC an arc, you know, and adjusted up to where they need to be.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
A commodity perhaps not associated with USDA World Agricultural Supply and Demand estimates is palm oil. Yet, as World Agricultural Outlook Board Chair Mark Jankanowski explains,
we cover palm oil in the WASD. We report on it when there are important developments that we think are noteworthy to policymakers and the general public.
And the development in June regarding palm oil, heavy rains in one of two major palm oil producing nations, Malaysia.
Last calendar year, their rainfall totals were way above average, actually record high. That has implications for palm oil production, basically by reducing yields, increasing the likelihood that fruit will rot and can't be harvested, etc.
With that, USDA lowered production forecast for palm oil by 2%.
Normal yields don't vary much, so that 2% reduction is noteworthy.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.